This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Stefan Hendricks, Director of Security for Europe at NTT.
Hi Ian, good afternoon. My name is Stefan Hendricks. I run the cybersecurity business for NTT in Europe. I've been with NTT, or formerly known as Dimension Data, for the last 15 years, and I've been in cybersecurity for over 20 years now and still loving it.
You're talking here this morning at ISW London about smart cities. It's an incredibly complicated problem because you're often trying to combine systems from multiple players who've had their own processes, own world, own ownership before. But we're promised lots of benefits. Where do we start, and what is the reality today of smart cities?
It's an excellent question. Smart cities are slowly but surely becoming a reality. We are seeing the first large-scale projects coming to life. I think Barcelona was one of the first cities that made the bold step of digitizing the whole city, or at least parts of it, in a fairly radical project that they've started about 5-6 years ago. I remember the city of Nice in France doing the same thing. We've done a large-scale project for the city of Las Vegas as well in the US recently, and there's many more to come. So how do you start such a project? It's not a simple task, of course. You always have to look at what are the business objectives that we're trying to achieve. Are we focused on, for example, improving traffic flows, making the life of our citizens digitized and therefore more comfortable? Are we opening up our information stores in terms of the data that we already have but that we haven't shared with citizens yet? Simple things like available parking spaces, for example. When I come to large cities in a car, which I do less and less, I have to say, finding a parking space is becoming a huge problem. So if you, as a city, can open up those data feeds to third parties, that then feed into, for example, automotive systems, which already is a reality today. In my car, I can actually see in some cities where the free parking spaces are. That's just a very small example of how city life can get digitized and what can be achieved. So the first thing you need to do is be very clear about the business objectives. What do we want to achieve? Second, from a cybersecurity and privacy perspective, you need to start looking at the risks that are involved. And like I said this morning, according to Metcalfe's law, if you double the size of the network, i.e. doubling the number of things that are connected to the network, its value will go up quadratically, but its complexity and its cyber exposure as well. The more things you connect to a city network, the more the exposure will increase. To complicate things even further, when you connect things to the city network, if it's modern technology, chances are it might speak IPv4, more likely IPv6. However, in terms of building management systems, for example, or sewage systems or any older systems, and there's a lot of greenfields out there in the cityscapes, you might find yourself with a machine, for example, in a dam that has been running there for 15 years. It's controlled by, believe it or not, a Windows 95 computer. And as we all know, Microsoft is no longer patching Windows 95 for a while now, but you still have to protect that PC from being attacked from the outside. Remember, if you cut the air gap and if you connect the Windows 95 computer that monitors the turbines of the dam to your IT network and you get hacked through the internet, through your DMZ, into your network, onto the dam, that server will be pretty much exposed. So there's technical complexities there as well. In summary, start with the business objectives, decide on what you want to digitize and what you want to improve. From then, build a roadmap, look at the as-is situation, and typically that's a 2 to 3 year roadmap. From our cyber perspective, start looking at the security elements. As I've said this morning, it is quite important to always have a secure by design mindset. Do not add security at the end of the project. Please don't. A lot of our clients have done that in the past. Security as an afterthought is a very bad thing to do. Start thinking about cybersecurity and privacy from the beginning, at the ideation phase, at the business phase, and not at the end.
How many cities come to you with a coherent plan? You talked about the business plans, but many of the things you talked about just now, in reality, they're point solutions. Improving parking, improving the ability to do X, Y, or Z. But the power of a smart city is about integration. If the cities approach with improve A or B or C without saying, we want this as a complete solution, first of all, no matter how much you put security into your ideation, it may not work once all these things are combined. So what is the, to use a phrase, the smart thinking that we need to hear from cities? And how many of them are actually at that point of articulating that?
What you say used to be absolutely true. It was a very federated or divided situation in the past because you had lots of fiefdoms, digital fiefdoms within the cities, different departments responsible for different things. you had the traffic department and the people taking care of the buildings and the facilities. There was a third team maintaining all of the citizens' data, and they never spoke to each other. In the last couple of years, what we've seen is a dramatic change. Typically, larger cities now have the equivalent of a CIO, oftentimes a CTO as well, and more a CSO, Chief Security Officer, which for us is great news, of course. If you have one CIO that has oversight across all of the digitization projects that in the past were siloed but that are now starting to come together and be much more aligned within that three-year roadmap that we are typically building with cities, that is a great thing. So I think the fragmentation we've seen in the past is now evolving towards a more coherent framework, with the city asking itself the strategic question, how do we digitize our city, how do we make it smarter, and of course, how will we then secure that digitization trajectory? Things are improving rapidly, and every new CISO that we meet for a large city is, I would say, a relief, because those organizations are now also starting to understand something that we've seen in the enterprise space for many years, of course, that you need a chief security officer as well, and not just a CIO or a CTO.
You as a company have just gone through a phenomenally complex set of mergers. In fact, you're still going through it and are likely to be doing this for the next 18 months, 2 years, as you bring three main companies and all of their subsidiaries together. In many ways, it mirrors the complexity of a city. How much are you able to, first of all, take from your existing smart city experiences and bring into what you're trying to do, but how much are you personally looking at what's happening inside NTT Limited and saying, oh, that has an implication for what we do for smart city customers?
It's a good point. We're actually bringing together 28 companies, and we've just acquired, as it happens, three other ones. So that would bring the count to 31 now. Our global CIO, Neil Lowe, recently presented the two-year roadmap on how we will bring together the IT infrastructure and the application landscape of those 31 companies. I can assure you it's quite a complex roadmap. There's a couple of guiding principles, and I can't go into detail because it's a work in progress, but things like consolidation, for example, is very important. There's the obvious elements like having a single ERP system, a single HRM, a human resource management system, unifying security, because our internal security was, of course, different between the 31 companies. All of that is now being unified. We're standardizing on the internal vendors that we're deploying. There's also one corporate security policy being signed off now. To get back to the smart city topic at hand, a lot of cities are now also going through the same motions. Like I said, in the past, you had all these fiefdoms, and they had their own little IT department, their own file servers, their own internet connection, safe or not, and they were pretty much doing their own thing. Now the city starts to see that the taxpayer wants to see more value for his dollar or pound or euro. Therefore, the city now has the responsibility to make sure that those tax dollars are adequately invested into secure infrastructure, into digitization, but at a holistic level and not just within the fiefdoms. There's a couple of large cities that we are talking to today, actually, that are taking that approach.
Citizens are often very cynical when large government, even local government, goes on about new IT systems. They've seen billions and billions spent over the last two decades and often think they get nothing for it. And that's because large IT projects have a tendency to go sideways very quickly and very expensively. How much is spent up front in planning that integration and understanding risk, not just by yourselves, but more importantly by the client?
The short answer would be not enough. In the past, there was definitely not enough ideation and business process re-engineering and analysis of what needed to be done. City administrations or city councils are now, especially for the larger cities across Europe, starting to think more like enterprises, which is a good thing, at least from that perspective. There's a lot of experience in enterprise life where we've been doing this for probably three decades now. There's good methodologies in terms of how do you collect all the business requirements, how do you prioritize, how do you derive budgets from that, how do you timeline that, how do you Gantt chart that. There's a body of knowledge around that that is now also starting to be applied by smart cities. They are professionalizing the way that they are setting up their IT departments. From a cybersecurity perspective, what I'm seeing now is that, first of all, we're seeing more and more CSOs and specialized teams around cyber, because they understand that the cyber exposure is becoming significant when you start to connect millions of things to that city network. Second, these teams are more and more professional. They tend to hire professionals, and they also reach out to the private industry to help them in building those plans and building those roadmaps. There's a positive evolution. Our citizens will start to see the benefits. Of course, it will take a while, and unfortunately, there is a history of very large projects having gone south very quickly. We can't deny that, but what I'm seeing across Europe is very positive. I can see a lot of great initiatives around iCities, or smart cities as they're called, that are not just about digitization, but that are also embedding the cybersecurity and privacy elements into the project. From the outset, I have to stress it's secure by design.
You touched on it earlier. You talked about OT and IoT.
Yes.
And we have this problem that whenever we look at any large infrastructure, we find old equipment lying around. Now, some of that can quite reasonably be replaced. But in the case of a city, the idea of replacing everything within all the hospitals, or replacing all the systems that run parking, or that run street lighting, or run the other municipal elements, is really not viable. That means we find equipment that can't be patched. So whereas we might start in an enterprise looking at where we have a vulnerability or an asset problem and remove that asset, we can't in a city. So that leaves us with a particular threat called forever day threats. These are devices can't be patched and will always be at risk of threats that have been discovered. How do you begin to identify, isolate, and remediate?
Yes, it's a good question. Everyday threats, which is a nice variation on zero-day threats, is becoming a problem. Pretty much all of the environments that we work in a smart city environment, they have at least partial brownfields. There's no cities built in the desert, apart from one or two exceptions that are brand new. The reality is there. Some of the PLCs that we find in, say, sewage systems or metro lines, they are 10, 15 years old. These things run ancient OSs, bizarre, exotic OSs with exotic protocols and ports that we've never seen. We have to deal with that. There are techniques to virtually patch these devices. And without getting too technical, there's specialized technology in the market that actually can talk the old protocol to the old stuff and talk IP on the other side, and also do things like packet inspection and protocol translation. You could call it a firewall / intrusion detection systems, but specifically built for OT with boxes that understand these hundreds of different protocols, because that's the other complication. OT sometimes makes me think of the early IT days. Unfortunately, I've been in this industry for 30 years, so I can still remember when IP was not something obvious as it is today. We had things like IPX, SPX, Banyan Vines, Apple Talk, and many more network protocols. Complexity was very real. What you had 30 years ago in the IT space, you have that now in the OT space. The other thing we also systematically do is, of course, segment the network, because you want to containerize. If something bad happens in one segment, you don't want it to spread across your entire infrastructure. On top of that, what we're seeing increasingly is specialized managed security services that are specifically focused at OT, because you need people able to read the output of the boxes that you drop into those brownfield networks, because the protocols are multiple and very different from what we know in the IPv4 or V6 world. You need trained humans to also look at what we call the meta events that are collected by catching all the logs from these specialized industrial security devices and making meaningful conclusions from those logs and those correlations. It's quite a niche topic, but it is something that smart cities will have to look at, because they have a lot of brownfields still out there, and we can obviously help in doing that.
One of the conversations I had at ISW Frankfurt was exactly on this topic. One of the things that came out of that was we have a massive skill shortage, but we also have this whole problem of who owns what. Many of those industrial systems are not put in by IT. They're put in by city engineers, or they're put in by companies contracted by a city. The knowledge of how they are architected, put together and function isn't there within the IT department. Where do you begin as a builder of smart cities to gather that knowledge, to understand that architecture, to even find that first touch point to bring this into a wider, smarter city environment?
I compare it to buying an old house and then finding out where the electricity sits. We have the same equivalent at a massive scale when we are being asked to secure those brownfields. The good news is that there are some very advanced scanning solutions now on the market since a couple of years. These tools will actually work much like you would have a traditional network scanner in the IT world, like a Nessus or a Qualys solution. You have the OT equivalents now that are capable of scanning the whole brownfield infrastructure and actually mapping the plumbing. You can actually see which devices are on the network, which protocols they speak, whether they are connected through subsegments, for example. And that's how we chart the old infrastructure. And the next step is then to start virtually patching these devices, applying segmentation and microsegmentation. and then in stage four, start to proactively monitor and manage the environment on behalf of the client. We do that 24/7. So that's how we tackle this.
Let's take a step up the stack. We've talked about the physical infrastructure so far, but there's a much more pressing issue to most citizens, and that's privacy. There's this fear that once areas become smart cities, everything and anything people do is tracked. They can't step out their house without being tracked. They can't get in their car and go and find a parking space without being tracked. There's this fear of uncontrolled data and data spread in the hands of governments. How do we bring things like GDPR into this? How do we get cities to understand what is reasonable to collect, what isn't reasonable to collect? And more importantly, how do they segment that data? Because all those different city departments over the years will have collected data in different ways. They'll have different policies. And a lot of that may not segue smoothly.
It's a very complicated problem. There's a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, a city, smart or not, has to comply with GDPR if it's in the EU. There's no escape or shortcuts. When you start to store PII, personally identifiable information, on a citizen in a IT system, you have to comply with the entire GDPR legislation. And cities are very cognizant of that, given that they're public organizations who, in theory at least, should be the first to comply with their own legislation. Above and beyond regulations and existing law frameworks, there is additional questions on how we deal with privacy. That's often where a political statement steers the rest of the actions. In some countries like China, privacy is not as well respected as it would be in Europe, for example. The US is probably somewhere in between, although the US is increasingly looking at GDPR and even building their own version of GDPR now, so I think they'll catch up. China has a different political philosophy. Every citizen has like a credit score, and the facial recognition systems that are on the streets there will literally capture everything that happens. There's a great Netflix documentary on that called I've Been Hacked, I think, or Have You Been Hacked, which is about facial recognition. The policy is determined by the political powers that be, and every country has to make its own decisions. What I would like to see going forward is more EU legislation on the subject, because we are at the risk of reinventing wheels. I think there's room for, call it GDPR plus. The technology is evolving very rapidly, and GDPR initially has been written based on a technological landscape at least 10 years ago, probably 15 years ago. And that's the problem with legislation. They're always a decade behind reality. In IT, things are going at light speed. There's some catching up to be done. But an EU-driven legislative framework is definitely something I'd like to see in Europe.
But one of the core tenets of GDPR is consent. If I live in a city and my city decides to turn itself into a smart city, there's no consent here. There's no consent to that CCTV camera. There's no consent to my car being tracked as it moves through a city, because this is all controlled and has been separated out from what is seen to be consumer engagement. When you're talking to European cities at the moment, how are they handling this issue of consent? Because they have no opt-out here.
Yes, correct. We operate in 17 countries, so I have a fairly good view on how things are similar, but also are differing between European countries. There's gradations there, but every country has the equivalent of a national privacy board. The naming differs, but it is a body that actually provides guidance to the cities or other governmental organizations in terms of what is the strongly recommended policy in terms of citizens' data, movements for face scans, what can you do, how do you store the data, how do you encrypt it, because the last thing you want as the CIO of a smart city is that your data gets breached and that you get the first page of the Financial Times in the UK, for example. That's pretty much the end of your career. Smart cities are aware of the risks, but they would typically get guidance from the National Privacy Institute or the equivalent in European countries.
How does national privacy play into this? Because the first thing we've got is multiple cities working with different vendors to help build out their smart projects. They're all gathering a lot of information. A chunk of that information makes sense to share with other large cities. And a good example of this would be AI systems and machine learning systems to understand facial recognition or to understand fraud. Is there a framework yet in place that allows that sharing at that level, or is that something that should be taken over at a national level?
I would, and again, we're in a domain that is drifting away from IT and more into political decisions. To me, that's a political or governance question. Should we consolidate data at the national or the federated or even European level?
But as a consumer, that's not a political decision. As a consumer, once you have said to me, we're going to become a smart city and gather your data, my first question is, well, what are you doing with that data? Who are you sharing that data with?
Yes.
So I think there's a very specific consumer focus here in terms of that data and privacy that is separate from that political decision.
I agree. What I meant is that things like GDPR have been voted in the European Parliament, and I think that's where these topics should be dealt with as well. You can't limit it to city borders. Like I said this morning, Metcalfe's law says that if you double the size of the network, the value quadruples, so there's an exponential increase in terms of value for everyone in the country and in the region, in Europe by extension. I think these matters like GDPR should be dealt with at European level, preferably, because citizens are very mobile and they don't stop at the border, and their face doesn't change once they cross the border and hit another facial recognition system. So I think the norms, the standards, the surrounding legislation should be decided at the European Parliament level, which is why I said initially that to me this is a political decision. If there's a majority in the European Parliament that thinks that facial recognition data can be harvested, is stored securely and only accessed for the right purposes, for instance, terrorism, threat intel, and not for any other purposes, that has to be very clearly defined. One of the things the European Commission has been doing quite well in the past decades is protecting the consumer. And it started with the simple things like if your flight is delayed, you get refunds, but protecting the digital life of the citizen is going to be the new challenge. GDPR is a good first step, but what we need now is a GDPR plus, a new version that takes into account things like OT technology. 10 years ago, nobody even conceived linking up OT systems with IT systems because, first of all, the technology wasn't there, and second, there was not really a business reason for doing so. People think AI is robots and super smart algorithms. It's not. The key thing you need for AI is lots of data. At NTT, we see 40% of the internet traffic, which is why we can now actually predict distributed denial of service attacks. We capture 1 in 10,000 packets from the backbone and use that through very sophisticated predictive algorithms to actually predict where the next son of the botnet master will appear. Because we know where it will appear, we take them out before they pop up. So it's predictive threat intel. Applying AI requires a lot of data. The smart cities will be generating a lot of data. That data has to be dealt with in a very responsible way. And that's the challenge for us as a society. That's where a political decision with a democratic majority has to be taken to make sure that we reflect the will of the citizens, European or UK.
I don't know a city that would tell you it has enough money to deliver services to its people. Cities are cash strapped. It now has all this data. Everybody's being told data is the new oil, leverage your data, make money off your data. Cities themselves do not deliver all the services, they use third parties, they contract out, but there are also a lot of commercial competitions here. That opens up supply chain challenge here, because if a city's going to share that data with a partner, how does a city validate the supply chain security of that partner and its partners? In your engagements, is there enough conversation about supply chain security or what needs to be done to actually protect citizen data there?
It's a very good question, and supply chain security will be one of the key topics for the next 10, 20 years. Increasingly, we are creating what I call hyper-connected value chains, meaning that you will connect the city network to the parking company, and the parking company will connect to the leasing company or to the car sharing company, and the car sharing company will be connected to Google to get the sat-nav data, etc. Of course, the city is also connected to Google through the Google Cloud platform, so the circle starts to be round. You get this hyper-connectivity. And again, Metcalfe's law, infinite possibilities, but also infinitely more exposure risk, and we'll have to deal with that. Solving supply chain security is not simple. What I'm seeing in the field is that cities are now being very prescriptive towards their IT suppliers in terms of having them contractually guarantee that they will apply best practices, whether it's ISO 27000 or other NIST frameworks, to make sure that at least they do the right thing from a framework perspective. Some cities even go further and will mandate penetration testing of their suppliers on a six-month or annual basis with red and blue teams. Some will even be very prescriptive in terms of the connectivity. They would say it has to be this kind of next-generation firewall or this kind of DMZ with these kind of rules, and if you don't have this thing in place, you do not connect to our city network, and therefore you will not be given the data. Which is another interesting topic. Will they give the data or will they sell the data? But it's interesting because, to your point, a lot of European cities, if you look at them from an EBITDA perspective, it's rarely a black number. Some people would say data being the new oil, the terabytes that the city generates of data must be of interest to the enterprises. You can do some very disruptive things if you combine the right data. Should the city give the data away or are they allowed to sell it? The data, of course, is generated from the citizens in the city. And I'm not a lawyer, but you might actually say, given that it's generated by the citizens, by them living in that city, isn't it their data? Should they then get the money back or not? Those are interesting questions, societal challenges and new topics that are intellectually very interesting, but are becoming a headache for policymakers because through that digitization, they are now stumbling across challenges that have never appeared 10, 15 years ago. Like I said, we did not connect the dam and the sewage system and the parking systems to the IT system because we couldn't, whereas now we can. And if you can, you will.
We'll know when this is mature, when the lawyers are involved a lot more. Stefan, thank you for talking to us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.